Any promise, nothing, though.
No. Ooh. We didn't have the time. It was only a half-hour contact.
Did you talk to him?
He gave me his card. So,
his card. He's so
funny. There he is. Well, we want to remember when we went to that, we went to Martin Luther King. You know, we started, well, Jim wrote, I thought, a very appropriate thing. It was short, you know. They weren't paying any tribute to King, were they? I don't think they were. They were talking about their own politics, you know. And they were fighting who's going to sit where, you know. I felt pretty comfortable. They're worse than the Raza.
No, I don't think so.
Tell me.
And then Karanga came in with his bodyguard. He came in, you know, and created a stirring. He got everybody upset. Everybody was frightened. What I noticed was that the ones that really controlled were all the ministers. So they had that thing controlled. And they gave him a seat, you know, somewhere, you know. But it was, remember that?
The things that seem to be happening in the South, so that one, the labor people who survive are tough. They, you know, they don't have time to fool around and go to parties and write protocol letters and all that. But they're tough, and they're action oriented, and they're not, you know, just not any garbage. They'll work with the people that are going to help them, and you know. We run into things, you'd think it was a 17th century court setting in some places, like in the Northeast, in terms of relations between groups. Okay, so that's one thing. And there's alliances between the groups because they need each other. The white liberal groups, the labor groups, and the students, and the black militants. Two, I think the system is more directed towards keeping new people from getting in than from restraining labor, the labor that's made it already. So that we've had labor do things like, in Birmingham, a guy who was head of president of the retail clerks told me that he got grapes off in 60% of the stores in the area that were under his control. Now, we seem to see that reflected for a while. I doubt that that still happened over the long run. But I had a report from some seafarers that were going through there and stopped there also, from Dolores, that something was happening around there. You know, they weren't selling grapes in these stores. The third thing is that they understand the farm worker problem. And the, you know, the problem of rural grower power. They're very close to it in a place like Florida, like Georgia. And you know, and you have large black populations that are also sympathetic. But what we found, and I think we found this pretty consistently, that the groups evolve through different stages. You know, certain leaders that we set up maybe learn really how to get to the point of pressuring, you know, to picket the president's house, the president of the chain, to really picket and not get into a thing where the store, one store says, you get these two other stores to a meeting and, you know, end up running around in circles. But still, even where we've had really good committees, they can't hold together more than several months without somebody getting in there and pushing. For example, in Miami, the largest chain in South Miami is Food Fair Fredericks. It has 30% of the whole market. We had massive picket lines, blacks, whites, maybe 30, 40 people for 2 days, and they took the grapes off. The management was all Jewish. They were heavily organized, and they weren't really against the boycott, you know, for any theoretical or ideological grounds. But then the committee didn't keep up the power. So after 3 weeks, the store kind of said, well, you know, they're not picketing anybody else. Why should we look like a fool? So they put them back on. And I've talked to labor people there who felt, you know, if we could keep up the pressure, not that they were doing anything, but if we could keep up the pressure, you know, they would take it off, and the other stores would. New Orleans is the same thing. They have, you know, you can secondary picket, and we've been doing that in the last 3 weeks, but we need somebody there to, you know, pull it together because it's so far away. You know, you have to keep talking every day. So what we've done, what I've done, and Janie's done to some extent, is pick out maybe 12 cities or 12 cities between the South and maybe one or two in the Midwest. And these aren't secondary cities. You know, this is Atlanta, Miami, New Orleans, Charlotte, Charleston, South Carolina. And talk to these cities every 2 or 3 days. Call up the people, how's it going, what's happening, just discuss. And then other smaller cities that write in, and there must be between, I don't know, maybe 300 of these that we've sent packets to, and every once in a while we get an idea that something's happening there, but we don't know exactly what, because we can't keep in daily communication with them, and we figure it's best to really, you know, concentrate and push and encourage and give ideas to the groups that are going.
In the larger cities. Right.
Now, Luis Melendres went down to Atlanta. We had a very wide group of people there, and he, yesterday, 2 days ago, he called in and said that what amounts to 80% of the stores, all of the chains, have stopped handling grapes. And they only picketed one chain, Kroger's, for 2 days. And he said that they've taken them off, and that Kroger's has taken them off in a four-state area. And he claims, and you know, we haven't seen the evidence of it, it's, you know, it's just too much to really believe, but, well, he says that Martin Luther King Sr. undertook the project of the grape boycott, you know, and saying that because of Martin Luther King's commitment to nonviolence and to you and to what was going on out here, that he has this group of concerned clergy there that went in, and Martin Luther King Sr. would talk and then preach to the store managers. And he told them that they were, you know, not going to start off by picketing or leafleting, but they were going to go and close the stores down. And that they're very interested in the Atlanta area also in, you know, not only seeing us win, but there's a lot of black people who are migrant workers and who are farm workers there that they're concerned about. And they'd like to build something out of Atlanta. So we feel it's a very strong area there. But in the overall view, we'll be able to get something going in about 2 months. It'll build up to a peak. We may have 30 or 40 people picketing, some press.
Oh, no, thank you.
And then if no one goes there, it kind of dissipates. We don't hear from the people. We have to keep calling all the time. And, you know, if we assume that, you know, subtract about 30% of what they tell us over the phone and say that's what's really happening, I think we've got a lot of people, more people informed about the boycott. We've got a lot of people who are not buying grapes. But we're not going to be able to really stop things in these cities unless somebody goes there and stays there, especially in these key ones that we're talking about, or, you know, comes to that area on a periodic basis to, you know, to just turn people on.
Can I just interrupt for one? I think that whole theory is kind of proven by what took place in Boston. Boston was running about 25th as far as national rank was concerned. And then, as I understand it, Marcos left and worked out in Providence and places like this, and now Boston has gone right steadily. Its position was eroded. The longer Marcos stayed out of Boston, the worse it got. And it got back up to number two or three, four, somewhere around there.
Yeah, that was, you know, I knew it was going to happen. When I heard he was going out, you know, I knew then what was going to happen. That's what happened to New York.
But I'm convinced that anywhere we go, the response will be there. Like in Nashville, well, Venice was in Nashville 3 days. For a period, we had 60 people picketing, and this was in the newspapers. I got a newspaper clipping that, you know, confirmed this. And now again, they got AMP there. They were working on another big chain, and but, you know, Christmas comes, New Year's comes, people go home, and, you know, and if they're going to get back together again, it's hard to say. But people will respond no matter where we go, and I think that we do something, maybe it's almost a responsibility, but we pull together groups that aren't even talking to each other in areas, especially students and labor, and maybe white students and black groups, to say the boycott is an issue, that it's something very concrete that they can do, and they're all interested in building ties to each other because they realize they're dependent on each other, but maybe pride or just all the complicated feelings keep them from approaching each other. But if you put the boycott in the middle of them, they can all come together and they start talking. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't, but it's, a lot of those links seem to have been made.
So we know that they'll pick up the boycott if we have
contact
or a person working there. Now, let me ask you one thing else. What our own people, you know, the ones from Delano, the ones working with us, how reliable is the information that they feed back to us?
Well, that's the best answer of that. I'm the best information or not, in terms of the shipments.
Well, yeah, I should be the most reliable.
I was just gonna say, if I'm the most reliable, we're in trouble.
No, but in terms of the shipment stuff.
Well, so Jim gets the information.
Is there a tendency to overplay it, to say, you know, we were really down?
I think there is the first time. It almost always happens. A good example is Minneapolis. Pete was really on top of the world, and he really felt that he had things secure, and things were building, and they were going along fine. And what happened is he was plowing up all of the soil that had already been plowed up by somebody else. He was plowing up all the liberal community, you know, and he was turning over it, and it was very happy. And then he found out he was only dealing with about 1% of the area. And so we got all these good reports, because there's all this interest and there's all this picketing, and it turned out that it was very limited. It was good, but it was limited. And when I went there, I pointed that out and said, you know, you got to broaden. Really, St. Paul and Minneapolis are one metropolitan area, and somehow we've got to, they're all, you know, they're just one city. And he was dealing with about 1/10 of one city. And but then when he got into that, a lot of reasons, but there was no more optimism about the picture. It was really hard going. Same happened, I think, in Portland. They got into that Salem thing, and they got a lot of publicity, a lot of noise, a lot of activity. But the fact is that it never affected the grapes, because they never really had a confrontation on a broad enough scale the way in New York City. You take all those boroughs and you stir up all those boroughs, well, something's going to happen. But it's our fault, you know, our guys' fault. They don't realize the vastness of the population.
And they don't have any pressure on them either.
No.
Do we put any pressure on them?
No.
That's how our union is. It's a miracle, you know, that if you want to do it, if you don't, you know. And we accept any excuses that they give us.
The only pressure is the best that we can do to prove that they're not doing a good job through those figures.
It's been my impression that when something's really tightened down, you can see it in the weekly shipments. Detroit and Chicago, I think, are very good examples of this, because when those cities finally got tightened down.
And the two individuals there are different individuals. I mean, as compared to most of them, Eliseo never bullshitted us about what was happening.
That's true.
He said, it's tough, I can't move, but he was determined, you know. What's her name?
Lupe
was the same thing, you know. So you're dealing with people who are very, very truthful, you know. And the more truthful they get, the more they understand. Like Eliseo, the last time I saw him, he looked very, not discouraged. And I said, are you discouraged, brother? He said, no, I'm not discouraged. But I said, I'm discouraged that I can't give you good reports and things are bad.
Yeah.
I said, well, the only way it's going to break is to keep at it. I said, I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to go back to the lane and pray for you, but keep at it.
I noticed.
And then, you know, it came. But see, you're dealing with people who, I think, if I remember well, who, you know, you tell them, look, it's lousy, you're not producing, that they will accept it. And other people who you tell that, they won't accept it. And you know, and so you can't, you know.
I did that, exactly that in Minneapolis. I said, look, you've been sending me all these newspaper clippings and things, and you're 22, and you used to be 10.
Yeah.
I mean, you used to be 22, and now you're 10. And the proof isn't here, and we just can't accept it. And that, you know, Pete just left.
One point, it seemed that all the shipments to Boston and New York were really going to Providence. It was that kind of situation. So that there is a lot of, among some people, it was my impression, I think there is an attempt to put the best face on it. And I think everybody out there has a self-interest in doing that.
Well, are we now on the tactics, on the strategy, or do we have more reports? I'd like to hear if, you know, we have, the one report I can hear is, how are we doing in the overall, you know, as compared to 60, with 60-60 comparison, the estimate of grapes in the, in cold storage, what's the estimate of grapes, table grapes going into wine, and, you know, that.
Jim, I had the stuff with me, I didn't bring it over. You want, I can come back in about 15 minutes with some of the...
Yeah, I think it'd be important to put everything into that. While we wait, are there any other reports you have, any other statistical reports or...
Let me make one observation. No, I noticed when we came back, when Jen and I got back here, there's really a lot of euphoria around the office because different people were endorsing the boycott. And that seemed to be like a whole game that people were in, how many people you could sign up. And I think we could almost, you know, I mean, approach it like an operation, you know, what you do in a city, and break it down into components to say to people, one of the things you do, or you try to do, is to get endorsements. Now, endorsements may not be important. They could be the last thing, you know, in your city. I mean, you know, if you maybe, if you had 200 people who were really militant and you spent time going house to house organizing them, that could be more important than meetings with the mayors and everything. Now, I don't know how to tell, you know, what city that's important and what isn't. But maybe in approaching the boycott in the future, we should try to, you know, talk to people and really analyze endorsements, speaking before groups, raising money, or recruiting, you know, really hardcore people, and seeing what the various value is. Also, it would seem to me that for every city, if we made a kind of progress chart, you know, we know what the stores are, we know how many, and we know what percentage of the market they have pretty accurately from the books that we have, and, you know, we can always call the retail clerks and get the complete detail that we needed. If we made a chart for each city and gave them a chart there so that we could very precisely say, you know, they could, you know, this five stores in this chain, and we can, you know, we could plot that and keep a record of it and keep a close record of it, I think that would make people think more realistically of what they're doing, and also, you know, give us more realistic information.
There was Manuel's objections, you know, to getting all the mayors to endorse the boycott. He said, well, you know, how is that going to translate into getting the grapes off? Do we have any more reports?
Yeah, well, I think there's two tactics that work. One is one, and the best one is to get the grapes from being sold. That I think is a near a surefire thing, second to not let them get there in the first place. But not, you know, in other words, keeping them out of the markets is the best tactic. The second best is not the press release mayor route, which was the second approach in all of the case, was the second line of defense. But the second best is what I think Andy's been doing in Baltimore, and I think we can prove it statistically that what he's done is effective. He has had very few picket lines, but he has taken the city and he's blocked it off, and there's 2.5 million people in that city, and he's passed out over 1 million leaflets, and he has not, I don't mean pass out leaflets on the street and just this, but I mean get them right to the home. I mean, he really makes an effort of getting
it's
into
really
the neighborhood.
That's how to talk
tell,
to them.
Tell how
they,
yeah.
That was the first city I went to pick up the car, and we got into about an hour conversation before I left, and he says that you know, a march is okay, a few picket signs is okay and all that, but he says, but you're not going to reach everybody. And he says that the only way we're going to win this is just, for people in the suburbs to know what is happening. And so what he's done is that he's taken the whole area, just blocked it off, and then, you know, the people that he has working just go house to house. It's a hard ground, you know, well organized political campaign, it seems, you know, getting right down to the grassroots.
That's what
and just boom, boom. And he says it'll take more time, but it'll be more effective.
And there's never been an editorial in the Baltimore Sun or whatever they call it, in those newspapers, never been an editorial. But what he's done instead, he's gone out and caused trouble out at the labor camps in that area and pointed up you know, what farm labor life is like, and they've taken the press right in and said, this is what we're fighting. This is why we don't want you to buy grapes. See the conditions that your own neighbors are living in. Therefore, if you want this to, and he stayed all the way from
mind.
He brought it home, was really, you know.
Yeah, he's kept it out of the, it's never become a political issue, and it's never become a controversy, really. I mean, it is with, you know, a little group, but it's not something you split Republicans and Democrats over.
Yeah, or Baltimore and California.
And it's, and so that there's two ways. One is, you know, stop the grapes at the market. The other is go to the consumers. And I get the feeling from the statistics maybe that the second way may be better, because there's no way the growers can fight that.
Yeah, there's no newspaper fight, no nothing.
They can't fight that.
You know.
That's right, and it holds. Once you've got it, it holds.
But I found that, you know, I was only 2 weeks in Philadelphia. In these 2 weeks, I found out one thing, that when Frank was there, first of all, what happened is that, I think you mentioned this, Philadelphia set about three or four that took cracks at it, you know, and that's very bad. You mentioned this, that they go out there and then it makes somebody mad and leave. And the guy that comes in next has nothing, you know, like nobody had been there. That was just lost time. The other one comes in and stays a month or two, and he pulls out. You have to, the guy that follows him's got to start completely anew, you know. Everyone that goes to that city is going to start anew. I don't care what you say.
Each one gets a less response.
Right. And then that's right, they get turned off. Because it's like, well, these guys, there was somebody here before, you know, and something went wrong or something. But then these guys were making, what you're saying right now might have been a good thing or it might have been a bad thing, or we have to analyze this. They were talking before anybody. There was a kindergarten group that wanted to hear, and they would go talk to the forum. High schools, colleges, labor, church, anything. They talk every day, you know. This might be because you get people informed, you know, looking at it like the way Andy's doing it. But they weren't doing too much organizing, really, the kind that Manuel would like to do, or Dolores or somebody else, you know, getting them picketing and this sort of thing, you know, getting the community involved. Now, we haven't, in Philadelphia, they haven't been able to take none of the chains and remove the grape. They're still selling the grape, even though it's so close, just 85, 90 miles from New York, and New York and all that is all clear. And the guys in Philadelphia refused to remove the grapes, you know, even after a lot of picketing, you know, real good, solid picketing, you know, they still refused to remove them. Well, anyway, the reports that the retail clerks gave us, the retail clerk, this guy, what's his name, well, the head of the retail clerks are that young guy.
Never mind his name, it's all right.
Well, it's not important, but he has Philadelphia also cut up in groups, you know, even like business agents, I guess, everybody has his own district, see? Yeah. And he has, one of their jobs is to get reports on how the grape is doing, you know, that's part of their work, it's in their day's work. They have to bring weekly reports or bi-monthly reports, and they tell us that the grape sales have gone down from 25% to 30%, you know. Of course, I think your reports say different, whoever's taking, see? They give us this kind of reports, you know. So I thought, well, maybe these guys are doing the job by speaking to so many groups and leafleting, and you know, and even though I haven't been able to get the stores to remove the grapes, they're still, the public is not buying the grapes. But this is what I was believing all the time. Now, according to your reports, it's probably different, you know. It's not
it isn't,
it shows. Yeah, well, it shows a time when it was down pretty good. I mean, not down good, but two or three places. But then you could tell, I don't know what it was, there was a period of time there, I guess it was between the time Frank left and you came in, and it was just kind of exploded.
Has it gone up again, or is it still down?
It's down two places since Storm 66.
Well, any more reports? I agree with Jim 100% on what he said about, and it's probably, you know, it's human-like. If you go to a town and you can't do the work that you were sent to go do, so you're going to do the second best to get some reports and publicity to send back to the lane to show that you are doing something. I'd be willing to bet my neck with anybody that I go to any town that it's clear that it's got a lot of damn grape in there, New York including, and Boston, anywhere. and we're just making ourselves believe that the rape's going on. Now, I'm not saying that it's not helping or cutting down the sales because of the fact that the buyer is making the money, and they're chiselers, and they're, those cars coming back to Delano, we don't send them back, they send them back, because as a buyer, you know, you're a sharp cookie, baby. You send two or three of those boxcars back, and then you buy the grape at nothing. You just come, well, send them back, you know, and I'll try and buy them for you. I'll try and sell them for you.
Why don't you tell me your theory?
Well, that's not my theory. I've been a buyer, too, you know. You're a buyer. You're the axle, you know. When you're a buyer, you're the axle of the company, you know. That's where the money comes, not the selling. The selling part is nothing. Anybody can sell. The buying is a...
You buy it from
that's the axle, sure, you know. Yeah. So the buyers are sharp, and they know their business, though. So even though they might be the best friends of Guimara or the best friends of anybody, but maybe when it means to money, they're going to go for everything they can get. So what's happening is when we have boycott comedians in these towns, they go out, and that's why the grape went down in New York and all that other places, you know, not because we've done such a tremendous job, because there's no way in the world that they can... They can send Jesus Christ himself to New York, man. He can't do nothing over there talking to people. Like Jim said, maybe in one barrel, and he seems to believe that he done the whole job, you know. Because it's too big, you know. Now, it does help, because the buyers are looking for this. Well, the buyers wish that they saw a line every day. I don't care where. They're looking for the line and taking pictures. Those are the guys taking pictures all over, you know. And sending them to Jamar. Look, God, we can't sell this damn grape. You know, I talked to one of the buyers. I kind of got close to him and talked to him. And he says, hope this damn boycott never ends, baby. We're making money. Sure. No. No, they were given the grape in San Diego, they're giving the grape in Imperial Valley.
Could I interrupt you just a second?
No.
That is still helping the boycott.
I said no.
Because you just said it because they're not getting enough money for the grape.
I said it's helping. Yeah. I'm talking about realistic grape. I'm saying that the grape is not coming out. And I'm saying that if you really want to take the grape out completely out of New York, boy,
forget it.
You need a lot of people down there. You need at least five organizers in every barrel. There's five barrels there. And yet you're not going to get it all out. And there's no way in the world, and nobody can tell me there's no grape in New York. There's just as much grape as has been there. Oh, they're selling it for nothing because of the buyers helping us. And anywhere else you go, I don't care where you guys tell me there's no grape, I'll go and I'll find a lot of damn grape there. And let's face it, you know, it's hard to take the grape out. Hard to take a grape. I don't care where it is. You couldn't take a small town and clean it. You gotta have a lot of people behind you. You know, the only time I think that the grape was cleaned is when the unions acted in New York. But that's a different thing altogether there. But I think that Gene Brown and if we had maybe four or five more Jim Browns and him doing what they're doing. You're doing most of the job, actually, tell you the truth, in the cities and everywhere you go, because I went to some cities that they didn't have no boycott, and somebody knew about the boycott. It was on account of you. All we can do is just go out and leaflet like Andy's doing, and that's the best thing you can ever do.
Because of its effect on the buyers?
Right? Its effect on the... It's affecting the buyers. And it's going to the people, you know, like I suggested that to Fred Ross about 2 months ago, on the same identical thing that he's done over there. And that's all you can do, you know. It's even better than picketing, because if you've got 10 guys picketing and you send 10 guys to leaflet, you're going to get more response out of the 10 guys leafleting, especially around the parts where, you know. And better yet, if you can send them 10 guys to work with 10 different groups, for them to leaflet and make them leaflet, you know. Then you got more than just saying the farm workers don't want you to buy grapes. If you say, well, organization mafia here in this town is a well-known organization, I urge you not to buy grapes for the full farm, that hits even more than our leaflets.
So you can kind of combine the effects of, well, see, one thing I always recommend is that, well, I tell them, first of all, they know the city better than I do, you know, so they have to make some decisions. But one thing I recommend is that if they're going to get any organizations behind them, they should get those organizations within the first 2 weeks, just their endorsement. Because see, later on, if there's confrontation involved, or when it finally comes out that SDS is organizing it or something like that, these organizations can't back out, you know, because they're already committed. Okay, but you can't spend all of your time doing that. Sometimes there are no groups to speak to, you know. So if you can combine this, you know, so that you have your leaflet and, you know, you've got these organizations backing it, you know, try to get it so that you've got enough organizations so that at least, you know, the people who are going to receive a leaflet belong at least to one of those organizations or something like that. You know, that might be, you know, that could be very effective.
Well, the other thing I think is that realistically, no, our guys get out there by themselves. If a guy is a natural worker and hustler, you know, he's going to do it. If he's not, he's going to take it easy. You know, there's no pressure. So my idea is that we got to have someone who can go and put the pressure on them. Really lay it on the line. And our man will do that, because he can do it. This guy says, God damn it, you know, you're not doing your job. And he said, we want you to produce and we don't want any excuses. Do you know what happens when you get that? You get one of the things, you say, well, I can't do it. Or, you really get them, you know, they really do it. And we're going to win the strike. The time when we ask people to please do it is gone. It's past, you know. We're loaded in the lane with people who don't want, oh, I don't want to boycott, well, my wife doesn't want to go, or, you know, they don't want to suffer. See, we're caught in that trap. So the ones that are producing over there are the ones that, you know, that have it in them to produce. You produce if you want to, if you don't want to, you don't produce. Now, my idea is that together, whatever plan we do, we should send Manuel to Ohio as an example, you know. And his job is to take a whip with him, and then, you know, just, he can do it. Just get out there, you know, and say, look, you're not producing, and we want you to produce, and I want any excuses. The day of excuses are over, we want you to, if you're working, see, those that hustle are going to do something. If you hustle, you'll do it, because the boycott now is known, you know, and all these things, you know, so it's not, there's a lot of people for it, you know. So it just means somebody just that...
getting them together.
Yeah, you can't get up at 10 o'clock in the morning and hope, you know, to be successful. Or get up at noon and hope to be successful. And that's happening in some places where they're getting up, you know, late. They're not... They're running around, you know, like in a cage. See, I've gone through all of those things, you know, in my experience, you know, where you just start running around, you know, chasing your tail. And see... You need, first of all, you do that because even if you're a good guy and want to do some work, you don't know what to do. You know. But if somebody comes and jars you loose and says, look, brother, we want you to put your nose to the ground and really get something done. And whatever plan we'll come up with, we got to have somebody go and do that.
Well, see, that's what you need. It's not a matter of cracking the whip, like you said. I guess what it is, it's an attempt to happen to anybody, even to me or anybody else that... you're a certain length of place, you know, and you get stale surrounded by this thing, and then not only that, but maybe you're working double, you know, than what you should be working, but you tend to see this thing as this is the way we have to do it, and this is the way it's going to be done. So now, I know this for a fact because, well, it happened, I know it happens to me, because you go into a town and you're new, you go in there, and then you don't know nothing. You don't even know what's happening with them. So you see, you know what they're seeing. You see what they're doing. Huh?
You see like blind.
No, you go down there and see, you know, what they're doing, and the same routine every day, and you can see more than they do because they're well, you know, it happens to anybody. I think once you go into a town and stay there 2-3 months, and you just go around your literal circle all the time, you know, the ones you already know, the ones that are helping, and you don't tend to get out.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not cracking the whip. I guess it's going down there and telling them, well, we should change it around a little bit, see what happens, see? Change it around to the other side, even though some wouldn't want to change it. But once you're doing that and getting that done, you know, if you change it around and it... helps, yeah,
for example, I went to Denver, you know, and when we were reading the reports, you know, I had an emotional impact on me to see that the Denver's, you know, what is it? Not that effective or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. notice it. You know, no, it's critically bad, you know, crucially bad. You know, not, now, I remember when I was there 2 months, and there's one thing I know that happened that I don't think I would allow to have happened, is that, see, we reached a compromise with the store chains, and that's putting up the signs. But Juanita fought it to the end, yeah. You know, because she, you know, I think she saw more better than I did, or than the people helping us did. See, that you know, a compromise like that doesn't get the grapes off.
No, I can't. You know, do.
And I wasn't experienced enough, I guess, to have the confidence to say no, you know, to the young priests that were helping us and so forth, you know. But the thing is that if someone can come from outside and be able to objectively criticize,
you can see it, yeah.
You can see it a lot better, right? You know, because you know how vested interest is too. You want to believe that you're doing the best you can and all this stuff and that can be very
in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Something like that happened there the last week I was in Philadelphia. This particular AMP store said that they were going to remove the grape on a Tuesday. We pick it on a Saturday. It comes Tuesday, we have 3 logs left, and that's it, no more grapes. So then one of the clergy that was very involved there, I said, we're going to keep on this, a good location, we're going to keep on picketing this guy, even if he does remove the grape, you know, it's a good location, and from this store we're going to hurt him and make him remove the whole city. And he objected to that very much, you know. He started giving me, he said, it was immoral. I said, I don't give a hell what it is, we're still going to do it, you know. See, I put my foot down, you know. And he didn't like it, but at the end he seen that my way was
mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, this is the way we've done it in other places, you know. It's the only way we can get into. I didn't, you know. And he was almost convincing the other people, the volunteers and everybody that was helping around, that it was right, because the guy says, we have no beef with this guy or this particular store. We have a beef with the company, you know. That's why we're going to stay here, you know. And it turned out that the guy didn't even, he had promised and everything, you know. He says, come Tuesday, no more break. He didn't even remove him, you know. It was just something happened, and they says, well, says, I got orders from up above. It says, they just sent me some more grape, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we still kept on picketing this one. We would have kept on picketing this store even if they had removed the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the little things that you have to, you know.
Yeah. Convince people that you know,
right.
You cannot trust a store manager.
That's right.
You have to operate on that principle.
You don't think he might have just kept him on because you guys and said you were going
to
pick it anyway? Or did
he
know?
He didn't know.
Well,
that was a
dream. It's even better if he keeps him, you know. Then you got the excuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
The people were objecting to it.
Right.
Jim, I'm still not clear, like, on, you know, what Eliseo's done, what Lupe's done. That's, you know,
well,
that's a different process than
Michigan.
What's happened is that they haven't given up, really. I mean, it's not anything specific they've done. They just kept trying and trying, and finally...
Right.
They were effective in getting priests involved, and that didn't work. They were effective in getting a little bit of UAW involved, and that didn't work. They were effective in getting a political thing involved, that didn't work. But finally, in both those cities, there came a time when both of them said, we're going to go to jail, and in both cities, and they focused it on that event, and they brought in all of these events, all of these different groups. On one instance, in both cases, they blew their tops. They said, you know, we're going to stop it. But they knew the time to blow their tops. That was the important thing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the time, and it was like pouring something into water and just changed the color all of a sudden. But everything was there. But all of a sudden, it changed because it was focused, and that it was like putting one of those little lenses in the sun. You know, really.
I can
burrow
you
in
know,
there.
In Michigan. Well, I think what happened there. First of all, when I arrived there. Guadalupe, she was the most depressed person I've ever seen, you know. I mean, she was really, you know, even the halo was drooping at her. And so anyway, we were talking, and she was really bitter about the union. So, you know, she's got into trouble with the union, so she's beautiful. And so what had happened is that, she was able to get Roger Craig, Senator Roger Craig, to take over as chairman. At least, you know, public-wise. And he's a very popular state senator. And then at the same time, the press had been very bad, but then that weekend, the week right before, the weekend before Thanksgiving, there was an article saying hundreds ready to picket AMP. And then the editorial pages, there appeared 3 letters in our favor. You know, all this happening at the same time. And then at the same time, things that developed at the state legislatures, Senator Craig had the power, had been able to build up a block that could block legislation that the store chains wanted. And so he let them know that if there are grapes, you know, in the stores, they're not going to get that legislation.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And then, so that kind of business is all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That kind of power is.
Right.
Yeah. And then the you know, all this was set it up, and then we spread rumors that the Black Panthers and the Brown Berets were going to be spreading, you know, making special visits to all of the stores. And then we held a special rally. There were about 200 to 300 people there, and that was covered by the press. So everything went up to a point, and then Guadalupe said, "I'm going to jail on Thanksgiving," you know, and that did it, you know, that was just, she was all set to go to jail, you know, she had just. She was going to fast and go to jail, you know. And
what was she going to do?
She was going to sit in on
the store.
Oh. Yeah, one of the head offices, something like that.
That's that confrontation, that.
Right. Yeah, and that did it. All those things together, you know, just boom. And then after AMP gave in, the AMP called us, you know. And then so then Senator Craig started just calling all the other chains, telling them what AMP had done, and that was it, you know.
But are we on tactics now?
Yeah, but see, they're not gonna. My theory is that they're not gonna keep the grape off.
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly. See, what
so
they've done now.
We've always gone this. You know, they take it off and they put it right back.
Well,
so
you know.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, what is necessary after that? So we had another rally right after that, and that is that the fight isn't over yet. You know, we had all our supporters, and we said we cannot let down on the pressure. So now we have developed tactics for. For example, little cards that thank the manager for you know helping us, and that we're checking on you, you know, every other day he gets a little note.
That's right.
You know, and just spread this all over the city, you know, just to keep the pressure up, you know, so they know that this is happening, you know, because you can't do it, and I mean you take the pressure off and the grapes will come back just like that.
Well, I think I think that like Philadelphia and New York, New Jersey especially, you're just going to have to divide 10 people into boroughs, and that's all there is to it. That you just can't make it out of one group coming out of one office. You just figure that you waste a half a day going to a borough.
Remember that day, you know, the traffic.
So since we're talking about this and if we don't do that, if we don't break people up naturally while they got a place to live there and a place to stay, but if we want to do an effective job in New York, it's going to have to be broken up in 5 different areas, and that's all there is to it, you know.
Just for me.
I don't see how they can, because there's a lot of rape now in New York. What's the big supermarkets? Well, they sell rape, but those small stands. I was talking to Dolores a week ago. She said one of those small stands had over 200 boxes of grapes. Small stands.
More than any Safeway store sells,
man. Because their specialty is to sell grapes.
Do
you want to talk? Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I came from New York, you know, and the supermarkets are not handling grapes, you know. They have the big ones, you know. The AMP has almost 500 stores, and they're clean. Walbaum's has 380 and they're clean. Big Apple has 470 and they're clean. And
but not all over, Richard, because what's her name? Mary just came from one and she told me there's grapes now. I mean, somebody's lying.
When we got the agreement in New York, I asked some people to check on the island just because I happen, my aunt lives out there. And in Nassau and Suffolk counties, the stores, with one exception, were all handling grapes.
That's what I'm talking
about. She talked to the manager. She said, "Well, if they send them out, we handle them. Sometimes we have them, sometimes we don't."
When was this? How long ago was it?
It was around Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
See, Nassau and Suffolk supposed to be clean. You know, they're checking them every day.
Richard, come on. You know better than that.
The thing is, you don't know the operation. Our friends do the same thing the local office does to us. They con us.
Right, that's what's going on. That's what's going on.
That's why they're our friends.
Sure.
I didn't understand that.
A guy that you think is checking a place out there does the same thing that our staff does to us. Your friend in Suffolk County cons you sometimes, mm-hmm. not all the time, sometimes, the way that sometimes our staff cons us.
Yeah.
And they say they checked 10 stores, but what they really mean is they drove by maybe 7 and looked in 3.
Right.
Well, then I couldn't. I couldn't say yes or no.
Or else they go a week without
mm-hmm.
checking them,
mm-hmm.
yeah. and they say, "Well, I've been checking all the time." To them, to us, all the time means every day, every day, every day.
Right.
To them, all the time means maybe once every 2 weeks.
Well, what's the aberration?
We're not depending only on people. Well, in the island, yes, Gretchen Haynes is out there, you know, and Gretchen Haynes is Gretchen Haynes.
Marvelous.
Okay.
Right.
Then, in Brooklyn, in Queens, and in the Bronx, and us. Our people check them. I mean, the brothers, Mary, Peter, we have a lot of people that are working with us there, you know. These people are checking the stores, you know, and they make a daily report. Of course, they don't check all the stores every day, you know. I'd be lying to say that they checked the 400 stores in one day because it'd take about 2 or 3 days before they can come around, you know. And with the combination with the other people helping, you know, that's the reports that's what it is, you know. Now, he's saying that somebody told him that they're scraping. I wouldn't believe in Suffolk and the other county. This I would not believe, you know. But of course, somebody told him it's got to be true, you know. But those are the places that are really clean, you know.
Imagine the other ones how they are.
Well,
that's
what it is, you know.
Well, let's, we know we're hurting the boycott. We know the boycott is hurting very much because of the buyers, and we know this. But, I mean, the grape is really. I mean, I'm not saying that they're selling as much now. You know, they're not selling as much, and the grape is not as good. They're not selling as high as it would be selling. We're hurting them bad, but there's grape in the stores.
Why don't we get the report from at this point from Bill, and then we'll go back to tech and send to strategy.
I hope I have a report for you. I have difficulty interpreting this stuff. You know, what does it mean? We can count them, but then we get down to the problem of what does it mean? Okay. We wanted to know how many, where do we stand as far compared to last 66 as far as shipments are concerned. I'm not going to go into all the problems there are with the thing, but compared to 66, all methods of transportation, there were 28,000 carloads shipped from California up through the end of December.
28,000?
Roughly.
That includes trucks and everything?
Yeah. Right, and there was 26,000 in 1968.
26,000?
In 1968, yeah. So that would mean, about 2,000 down, somewhere around, well, it's more than that. It's 28,835 and 26,134. I'm sorry, I don't have percentages on it.
What percentage would that be?
10%.
Lower this year?
Yeah, lower this year. Now, if the system they have for collecting information this year is really working the way they set it up to work, it's a lot more complete. The record keeping would be a lot more complete this year than it was in 1966. Now, I'm in the process of trying to check. We broke that down and we found that, the trucks were collected on a different basis. We know car lots are just about the same, and the government's pretty happy the way they collect the railroad information, but the trucks are different. And There may be some problems. As far as rail, which we're real sure about, have I got a cumulative on rail? I just have it on the basis of the month. And that for the month of December, rail compared to 1966, for the month of December,
1966 it was 1668, and in 1968 it was 1061, which is a 36% difference. It's 36% down for rail.
Rail.
Right now, if we look at the other way, we look at the car lots, the truck shipments, we find that there's about a 36% increase in truck shipments. Now, that may be
piggybacks.
The reporting, no, piggybacks go in as rail, straight rail. That may be the reporting error. I mean, difference in the way we're reporting things. And so I'm going to do a check on those cities that got 75% of their grape shipments or more by truck and see if, in fact, those cities are up by that much, by 36%. I still think the 36% decrease in railroad shipments is significant for the month of December.
Is a rail truck bigger than a truck?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a rail car lot much bigger than one truck?
Mm-hmm. 1,400 to 1,100, I think.
Well, 1,400. So then that would be a significant difference. If the trucks are up 36%.
Yeah, depending
on. No,
these are constant.
No, it's not.
These, yeah. What I have here are constant car lots. These are exactly the same weights. When I talk in terms of truck shipments, I'm talking about exactly the same quantity. It's converted.
Oh, I see.
Converted on the basis of 80%.
Of 80% of what?
A truck is considered to be 80% of a boxcar.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It's roughly 1,000 to 1,250.
Right.
All right. Let's see what else have I got here. If we compare all the, you know, using truck and rail, we compare 68 and 66, the month of December alone, there's about a 7% difference. I think we previously reported about a 20% decrease for the month of November in shipments. That's using all transportation modes, I believe. But if you want that, I'll pull it out. It's a question of knowing what you want. And
well, we want to know, you know, where we're in the boycott. Basically, they want to know, you know, how many, if possible, you know, what's the picture now? How much, is there any way in which we can tell how much grape is left in the cold storage?
Yeah.
How much has been sold? Just the totals.
Right, cold storage. The cold storage for the first of the month is not available. It will be available next week. As of the 15th of December, which is the last period for which it was available, there were 3,984,000, roughly, logs.
3,984,000.
Yeah, about 3,500,000 of those were emperors.
3,500,000 were emperors?
Mm-hmm. The 1963 to 67 five-year average was 7.7, or roughly 8% higher than that.
In storage?
In storage?
Mm-hmm.
Say that again?
The average for 1963 to 67 was roughly 7.7. The difference was 7.7. It was 7.7% larger.
Why can we? What was 66?
All right, 66 was 32.2% larger.
Wow.
More in storage here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
The,
that's very strange.
Then?
The whole figure is 6,306,710. Now, this is what I'm talking about with, as far as our interpretation was concerned. Now, on that basis, we killed them on price. There's not really any question about that. But what does it mean that there was more grapes in cold storage in 66 than there is now?
Well,
this year we had about 12%. The crop was estimated to be smaller.
Smaller than 66?
Smaller than 66. The table grape crop, which is what's in storage now, is only table grapes, emperors, calmarias, Ribeiras, was 12.5% smaller, with 13% smaller. So that's, you know, probably part of the difference.
Could another part of the difference be that there's an attempt at earlier dumping of grapes in the market?
Now, we picked this up because as of the 30th of October, there were no Thompsons and no
tokays. I want to know why they weren't, and I asked. And the market reporter for Bakersfield said that the growers got rid of the Thompson seedless because they have a shorter storage life, and they were afraid of getting caught with them later on in the season. So they dumped them and got rid of them rather than keeping them in cold storage. Now, is the same kind of thing taking place with the emperors?
Now, one thing about these figures are these are voluntary. That's true. As opposed to the rail shipments, which, you know, is an interstate thing, but nobody checks to see what's in cold storage.
Yeah.
This they is phone up and say, what do you got in cold storage? And he says, I've got about blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
You know,
they might have a...
What we'll do tomorrow is you're going to take me around and we can tell by the, you know, last year right after New Year's I went around and we did a spot check and we found some open doors, you know. Now we'll see how many open doors
but,
we have.
You know, last year, however, the grapes were almost all sold by this time.
That's right. Very few.
Well that doesn't figure what he's saying.
It's a very short crop.
I mean, we're not comparing last year, but I mean... I don't believe in the whole thing come and report out of this area because you know damn well that they know what we're watching it.
Well, not only that, in October, at the end of October, we published a report in El Macriado to all the boycott staff that the cold store that there were 48% more grapes in cold storage at the end of October than there was.
In 1967 or something.
Yeah.
And that was based on their voluntary reporting.
Yeah.
So it's obvious that it's obviously in their self-interest to change their voluntary reporting so that we don't make such reports like that in December or January.
Well, there's still 33% more grapes in cold storage than there was in 67 at that period, roughly 33% more, but that doesn't mean much. There was only 1,800,000 in there. The guy that has a self-interest in this is a guy named McDonald up in San Francisco. He said that this was the only way the industry had to judge what was going on, and he had confidence in the reports. But he's not biased by any... He's not unbiased by
any... The 48% figure was comparison to 67, then.
Yeah, we now might become confused.
Which was, in fact, the figure.
Yeah? Whatever it was compared to 67.
And 67 was a smaller crowd.
Yeah.
A much smaller crowd.
No, I think you say 66, didn't you?
So it was a mean list.
Tonight I've been reporting on 66.
That's right, that's what I mean.
But that was strictly propaganda. There's a difference between what I put out. What I put out and what... it's called how to...
Well, who knows, maybe they are selling more because they got the price for it.
No, the other thing is that there's no... We don't have any figures on what's going from cold storage to wine.
Not directly, no.
In other words, that doesn't have to show up in the same way as the...
But we do know that there's price.
We know that there's more wine. Yeah, we don't, but we can't... Yeah.
More. Well, what about that? Do you have that report?
The wine?
The wine thing.
All right.
There was an art newspaper article. Maybe it's just a...
I don't believe in that one either, too, you know.
All right, here's the grape crush is broken down. I just look at the Modesto area, which is down near Stockton, that general area, and the area south of the Merced River. That's the way they break it down. Is the Merced River? Well, it's north of Fresno. And we've surpassed the grape crush in this area, that is Fresno and Delano areas, by 2.2%. That's the total season. We're not done crushing yet. We've surpassed the total season by 2.2%. And in the Modesto area, it's up 23.7% compared to 66. We're at 1,000,000. Where is this? No, I didn't have. Yeah, 1,007,000 crushed in our area in 1968, and 984,683 crushed in 1966.
Do you have it for table grape crushed?
No, I don't have it broken down as table.
That was the figure that was.
Yeah. See, that doesn't mean too much because grape is transported from here to Modesto, and from here, you know, up to, well, you know, up to Lodi, and then they bring grape from over there down here, depending on the varieties that they need, you know. And so that would,
isn't it pretty obvious that like picking them, they're going to get them mostly picked, and they're going to get them mostly sold. And we're not going to be able to prove to ourselves or anyone else that they can't sell them, but it's the price that's going to kill them.
That's a tricky one to try and estimate. For example, emperors are higher.
Because they can give them away. I mean, in a sense, that's
what. Well, we got proof that we're giving them away in certain parts, you know, giving them away in stores to customers.
But,
I mean, now, how is that happening?
The store's already bought
them. You're right.
Well, we know that if the Dan boycott was effective, as effective we think it is, the growers would have signed up. So I think it's about it can't be more than 10 to 20% as effective as we think it is. It's, that 10%, you know, a 10% bite is too much.
Yeah. One of the things. Come back to the idea of tactics, but one of the things is whenever there's a good statistic, why we share that with our boycott people. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, the way you started the meeting, you mentioned that, you know, some people think the boycott ought to be ended. Mm-hmm. And some people think that it's, you know, pouring good money after bad. And so we, you know, we keep promoting the effectiveness of it. Then it turns right around, you know, and there are bad, and we can find good statistics, like that thing I produced and showed you, you know, that showed the
price.
Yeah, and they laid it right on the boycott. Just came out yesterday in the papers. Then we can find, you know, bad statistics too, and you really can't prove a bad thing by any of them.
There's no way you can prove it statistically.
Well.
Well, the only way it's going to prove itself, the growers will sign what it's really effective.
Yeah. I mean, what man says rings so true to me? I just really think that's the way our society runs. And that's just, those guys function just like that. It's the kind of bastards they are. And they don't really care about anything except how much money they can make for who they're buying for.
And they're going to, a lot of things
they're going to screw the growers, they're going to cheat them, they're going to lie to them, they're going to do anything, they're going to say there are 1,000 pickets out here in Baltimore, we can't sell the damn grapes, we can only give you 25 cents.
All them boxcars they've sent back, we don't send them back. They send them back.
Well, no, we do.
Huh?
Because the buyer needs some evidence. The buyer needs some evidence that something's happening.
Right. But I mean,
they've got to have that evidence.
Yeah. But, you know, they purposely, yeah.
Your argument, seems to be, doesn't say anything about what we ought to do or not do.
No.
In a way, it just makes it all more realistic and gives us a better.
That's what I was saying. Is when he says we don't send them back, you know.
But no, you know,
we are sending them back.
Yeah.
And then when you said these guys are screwing the growers because, you know, they sell them, we can't sell the grape. That's economic arson, an economic boycott. And it's exactly what's happening.
Don't you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I did. Very plainly. That's what I finished saying.
I'm fighting on the sideline.
I said that we actually don't, you know, we don't go pick at the damn boxcar and come back. They send it back because they want to, they got a personal thing to make money on, and really they shouldn't send it back if they didn't want to.
What proof do you have of this?
What proof I got of this?
Yes. Do you have a proof of this, or is it just your theory? You say that this, it's a theory with you, you know, like a theory with the other things, you know? That's what I'm trying to say.
No, but I think that's very, very realistic theory. Now, look, if we follow, you know, maybe we're doing the same thing, you know, on the boycott that some of the staffs make, you know, that we can't look out of what we're doing, you know. If that theory is right, then we should exploit that.
That's what we're doing. That's the only thing we're doing, because we're not stopping the rate.
Yeah, but if we shifted our emphasis to that, getting the buyers to respond to just the fact that we're starting something, you know, maybe we can get some shortcuts then.
But
you know,
that's where we started, though, wasn't it? Like 2 years ago?
No, but this is different. No, this is, it wasn't done, you know, openly, you know, it's just, see, the boxcars come back because someone's making a profit in doing that.
We know that there's been some effect, it hasn't been good enough. I think what we need now is to make a decision whether we're going to continue the boycott think that decision made, you know, okay, if that decision is made, then what are we going to do? And begin some of the
mechanics.
We cannot get price information or that is meaningful in any way.
In trying to find out about that, we have the problem with consignment shipments. We can look at FOB, we can see what public information is, but we don't know what consignment shipments are going to be like. What kind of private deal has been made? We can see some general things in terms of when things are shipped on consignment. We know that the growers are losing more money. I mean, it's more costly to bring their grapes to market. But as far as absolutely, yeah, I can take FOB prices and absolutely compare the price of Emperors at the shipping point here for any given year back to 65, for example. I've done it. And Emperors were higher in price this year than they were in 1966. What is the relationship between quantity and the price?
You don't know how much is shipped FOB.
We don't know what percentage is shipped FOB. That's true. We can also do for each of these 37 cities, do a price breakdown.